about time for us to begin this morning. Lord willing, Wednesday night we'll still be finishing up on Proverbs, Way That Leads to Poverty. Is there anyone that doesn't have that handout? I still have just a few copies of that handout. Is there anyone else who needs that handout? Okay. So as I said, Lord willing, Wednesday night we'll finish up Proverbs, Way That Leads to Poverty. I'm not sure if we'll get started on that this morning or not. We may just get started on it. Is what we're doing this morning is we're finishing up the discussion on the Proverbs that talk about some of the perils that are associated with being rich or having riches. And as we said, there's nothing wrong with having riches, with having wealth. There's nothing wrong with having those material possessions. Just as the proverb writer warns us, there's a few special things that the rich need to be aware of. Some temptations, some opportunity to for wickedness that may not be there with people who don't have a lot of possessions. So that's what we've been talking about. As where we left the point on Wednesday night, we were talking about trusting in riches, and we covered one point in that, and that was the fact that riches won't last. And as that last proverb down there states, he says riches, they're just like riches are going to sprout wings and fly away. The point is, riches aren't dependable. They're not going to stay there. They will make themselves wings and they'll fly away like an eagle towards the heaven. They can be there one day and be gone the next day. And one of the passages that we talked about there was Job, the first chapter in the 21st verse. Job lost everything in one single day. All of his possessions, he lost those all in one single day. Went from a wealthy man to a man with nothing. And what did he have to say about it? He said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there." And that was his point, that was that he didn't bring anything in. He wasn't going to take anything back. Those riches that he had did not last. We made some examples, like some celebrities. I think I mentioned, you know, Mike Tyson 10 or 15 years ago, very wealthy man, very successful man, well-known man. Now he's still very well-known, but for a different reason. Now he's the punchline of jokes, and his life has just went to nothing. He's in debt, doing menial tasks just to pay his creditors. So, riches don't last. A second point, as we pick up this morning, riches give us a false sense of security. They lead us to believe that we have something that is going to provide a strong foundation for us, when it's not going to provide a strong foundation for us. In the bigger picture of life, in the bigger picture of a spiritual end to our lives. The first one, Proverbs 19:4, wealth makes many friends, but the poor is separated from his friends. When you're wealthy, friends and sometimes power and prestige, sometimes special privileges come your way because you're wealthy. People will do things for you. People are eager to help you. Also, chapter 28, verse 11, the rich man is wise in his own eyes, but the poor who has understanding searches him out. The rich man oftentimes is in danger of thinking, I have these riches, I have this power, this ability to take care of myself. And next thing you know, the rich man is relying on his own planning instead of whose planning? Instead of God's planning. He thinks about how he can take care of himself and not how God can take care of him. So a couple of proverbs that warn us about that. And as we mentioned, there's some temporal advantages to riches. As we talked about in our class on friendship, with money sometimes comes friends. They may not be the best of friends, but people want to be your friend sometimes. There's a certain type of person that would like to be your friend if you have a lot of money. There's some privileges and some things maybe that you have access to that people without that money don't. And the danger with that is that we trust in those riches and we don't trust in God. They make us feel self-reliant. They make us think that we've got our plan and we can execute that plan and we can take care of ourselves. And we don't need God. There's a special warning given in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 17. In 1 Timothy 6 and verse 17 it says, "Command those that are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly all things to enjoy. So Paul tells Timothy, he says, you tell those people that are rich among you, he says, be extra careful that they're not what? That they're not trusting in what? They're not trusting in their riches, but they're still trusting in God. So we need to make sure that we heed that same warning as well. And there's a couple of examples in the Bible of people who thought that they didn't need God. The rich young fool, the rich fool comes to mind. Does anybody remember what prompted that story of the man that had a lot of possessions? He said, "What am I going to do? I'm going to tear down my barns, build bigger barns, and I'll be set for life." That was his attitude. I don't need God. I'm going to be set for life. I'm going to tear down my barn, build bigger ones, store up everything I have, and I'll be set. I'll be going according to my plan. What prompted that parable? Does anybody remember? Yeah, he said, make my brother share the inheritance with me like he's supposed to. And Jesus' response was, you know, beware of covetousness. A man's life does not consist of the things which he possesses. Don't put your trust in the things that you possess. Don't be so hung up on that you forget to trust in God. And another familiar story that we're told of in the gospel there is when there's a young ruler that comes to Jesus and he says, what do I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus tells him those things. He says, I've done all that. And he says, you need to do one more thing. Take all you have, sell it, give it to the poor, come and follow me. Was the man willing to do that? No, he sure wasn't. Where did he have his trust? It doesn't say much about his trust, maybe, but what was he more committed to? He was more committed to what he had possessed here than he was to following God. So some warnings for us, if we are fortunate enough to have wealth, if we are fortunate enough to be rich and have some material possessions, we need to remember that it's God that has allowed us to have that. God has blessed us with that. And our trust needs to be in God and not in those riches, because as we've already discussed, those riches can come and go like a bird with wings. They can just pick up and fly away and be gone. Be gone. Any comments or questions on the idea of trusting in riches or putting our trust in material things to the neglect of putting our trust in God?
You can look back at Howard Hughes before the computers. He was the owner of Hughes Aircraft, but in his last days, he looked like a homeless beggar. He was no better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of stories of men that have been fantastically rich, and then their ends. And a lot of times, what led to that was discontent. Even though he had those riches, he had that. That adrenaline of testing some of his own aircraft and things like that. He was just always looking for more, always looking for more. And at the end, he had nothing. Had nothing. Brother Benedict?
A lot of times people think of riches as hell. You don't have to have good health. You don't have to have anything for good.
That's right. That's exactly right. I don't think we're going to mention specifically health, but the actual next... Is there any other comments on riches and putting your trust in riches? The very next point Mr. Benningfield kind of leads us into is we need to recognize that there are some things that we can count as true riches. I mean, there's value to money. It's useful to us here. It provides for things here. But there's some things in life that we can find are much more important. And health is one of them. That we would give up all the riches that we could have if we could have... We'd give up all the monetary wealth, all the physical possessions we have if we could possess these riches, some of these riches we're going to talk about. And some of those are the idea of having a good character or the reputation of a good character, being content, and we've talked about that a couple of times in Proverbs now, that idea that the wicked man is always, he's always reaching for something more, trying to find something here on this earth that's not going to satisfy him. But the righteous man is going to be the man that finds contentment. And riches and wealth is certainly a danger of that. And even faithful children, passing that idea of contentment and character and faithfulness onto our children. Those are some real treasures. It says, better is the poor who walks in his integrity than one perverse in his ways, though he be rich. And chapter 30, verse 8, the second half there, he says, give me neither poverty nor riches, feed me with the food allotted me. And he says, get rid of those evil things there, but and I don't need to be rich. I'm not asking to be poor, but just give me the things that I need to have to survive. And better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fatted calf with hatred. Again, the idea of contentment there. Some more Proverbs here. There is one who makes himself rich yet has nothing, and one who makes himself poor and yet has great riches. You think that's talking about material possessions? There's one who makes himself rich yet has nothing. He may have lots of material possessions, but when it comes down to the end, if he's made sacrifices in the way of righteousness for that, he has nothing. And just the opposite is said of the poor man. And it says, and a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. Much food is in the fallow ground of the poor. Just because we don't have wealth doesn't mean there are not things that we can't pass on to our children. And again, the idea of having faithful children and the benefits and the blessings of that. As some of the first Proverbs said there, the idea of reputation of character. If you look in the qualifications for an elder, in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 7, he's to have a good reputation, obviously, of those within, but it says he's to have a good reputation even of those who are not members of the church. And in chapter 5 and verse 19, it goes on to say, verse 17 beginning, count them worthy of double honor. If you're going to bring an accusation against an elder, you do it with what? You just don't come up and shout something out. You come with ample proof, with two or three witnesses that say, yeah, this is true. Why? Why do you need two or three witnesses to come up against an elder like that? Because he's built... Go ahead, Charlie.
They've earned that level of honor.
Yeah, they have built a reputation over the years. They have built a reputation of integrity, of being honest, of having high moral character. And that's a real treasure in life, to reach that point in your life where those both within the body of Christ and even those with whom you associate and work recognize you as having high moral character, having high values that you're willing to stick to. The elder should walk in integrity and not in lies. He should walk in love. Those are blessings that we need to think about. Those are true riches, things that aren't just tied to money. And as some of the other Proverbs talked about there, the idea of satisfaction or contentment. We've looked at Ecclesiastes chapter 5 a couple of times, but just look there again very briefly. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, beginning in verse 12, expresses this idea of a man who is obsessed with physical gain. He's never happy. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, not Proverbs. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 12. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich man will not permit him to sleep. There is a severe evil which I have seen under the sun, riches kept for their owner to his hurt. The rich man is always thinking about, or the rich man can be always thinking about, how am I going to protect what I have? How am I going to get more of what I have? And there's a restlessness there, a worry there, that the man who finds himself content doesn't have that. He doesn't worry about those things. So there's a satisfaction and contentment. And we've already looked at 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6 about godliness with contentment is great gain. We can't bring anything in. We're not going to take anything out. So accept your food, accept your clothing, and be happy and content with those things. In Genesis chapter 18, this is where Abraham entertains three visitors, and then the next chapter after that is where Sodom and Gomorrah are destroyed. And God can't hide what he's going to do from Abraham, because as he sums up in verse 17, he says, shall I hide from Abraham what I am doing? And in verse 19, he says, I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord, to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. God says, I know this about Abraham. Abraham's going to teach his children. Abraham's going to instruct his children in the things that I've commanded him to instruct them in. And in Proverbs chapter 127 and verses 3 through 5, that's the passage that talks about children are like quiver, or like arrows in a quiver. And the fuller your quiver is, the better. Does that talk about all children? Are there times where children don't seem to be a blessing to us? See, that's the advantage of having true riches, of having children that are a blessing to us. And we need to make sure that we're having children that fulfill this. And that brings up the question that really, as Brother Bedingfield said, you know, if you don't have health, you know, your riches, you would gladly trade your riches for health. The proverb writer talks about some things that bring shame to parents, right? There's children who won't follow instruction. There's children who are gluttons. There's children who are lazy. There's children who are foolish, children who are wicked. Those are not the kind of children that brings blessing. So when we ask ourselves, what kind of riches do our children need? Do they need the latest and greatest toy? Do they need the fancy car as soon as they turn 16? Do they need all those things that we can give them, just any type of money and possession without any responsibility for it? Or do they need, like Abraham was, a man who was willing to command his children and teach them and train them in the way of the Lord? Those type of children become a real blessing. And when you see that perpetuated from generation to generation, as that last proverb there, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. That's not talking about physical wealth. That's talking about a man who leaves good instruction toward righteousness for his children. And that passes on and on down through the generations. Are there any questions or comments about this idea of what true riches are? Okay. One more under the topic of righteousness or being found righteous in the sight of God. That's certainly a blessing, a rich, riches and wealth that go beyond the monetary thing. Better is a little with righteousness than vast revenues without justice. This one is interesting. In chapter 18, verse 10, the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe. Where does the rich man run to? What's his strength? His wealth is his strength. And notice the last part. It's like a high wall in his own esteem. Is it really a high wall? Is it really that protection to him? No, it's not. But that's how he views it. He views it as his own thing. But the righteous flee to the Lord. And better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble. God looks after the righteous. One of my passages that when I was younger, that used to be one of my favorites or comforting is Psalm 34:15. The Lord's ears are open to the righteous; He hears their cries. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous; the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and His ears are open to their cries. And in Psalm chapter 37 is a good one because it speaks specifically about the rich man, the wicked rich man. Psalm chapter 37. And it'll be verse 16 is where we'll begin. Psalm 16:37 says, "A little that a righteous man has is better than the riches of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholds the righteous." Dealing specifically with the fact that a wicked man may have many riches, but the man who is righteous, even though he may not have much, is going to be in much better shape because he has the Lord protecting him, the Lord standing on his side. That wicked man that speaks, that his arms will be broken. He'll be torn down. He won't be able to resist what comes after him. And a passage we've looked at as well, Matthew 6:33. "Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and those other things that you're looking for, that will be added to you." We need to make sure that we're working for this rich thing that is righteousness, and not working so much for physical gain, but that we're pressing towards righteousness. John chapter 6 and verse 27, "Don't labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures for everlasting life." You want to be looking for eternal things and not temporal things. In Matthew chapter 16 and verse 26, Jesus said, "What will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what would a man give in exchange for his soul?" And that's a rhetorical question. The answer is, well, there's nothing that is worth your soul, that is worth sacrificing your soul for. Even if you had every possession, everything you could ever want in the world, everything you don't even want in the world, if you possessed it all, had the power to distribute it, but you lack a righteous relationship with God. It's worth nothing. It's worth nothing to you. So the idea of being right in the sight of God, that's a true rich. That's true wealth right there. Any comments on the idea of righteousness or questions? Okay. We're going to talk just a little bit on a related subject since we're talking about rich before we move into that, the idea of poverty or being poor. We want to talk about the responsibilities of blessings and benevolence. And this is one of those topics where there's a few proverbs in there, but it's not enough really to make up a whole class, but it kind of dovetails nicely with the subject that we've just covered. There's responsibilities that come with those that are rich in the regards of benevolence. There's responsibilities for all of us. And there's also blessings in being benevolent. We need to realize that. There's blessings in being benevolent. The first point is that God has a view of benevolence. And we need to keep God in mind when we think about doing good towards others. An evildoer gives heed to false lips. A liar listens eagerly with a spiteful tongue. He who mocks the poor reproaches his maker. And he who is glad at calamity will not go unpunished. When we see somebody suffer and we take pleasure and enjoyment out of that, when we have the ability to help, God does not look on that kindly. In chapter 19, verse 17, he who has pity on the poor lends to who? He lends to the Lord. And who's going to pay back that man for his benevolence? The Lord is going to pay back that man for his benevolence. That's right. And the righteous consider the cause of the poor. The wicked do not. And the last one there, what is desired in a man is kindness, and a poor man better than a liar. It's not necessarily when God sees the benevolence that we have. It's not that, excuse me, it's not so much the giving, the providing of that need, as what it demonstrates in the heart of the man doing it. That's important to God, too. That's important to God, too. He desires in a man is kindness, or the man who's willing to do that. So what are some applications we can make about benevolence? When we think about it today, when we think about helping somebody out today, whether it be through financial gain or somebody that we see in immediate need, a stranger or otherwise, there's a lot of danger and distrust associated with that today. We kind of live in a different society than even 20 years ago when I was growing up. I remember times on winter's night where there would be a stranger sleeping on our couch. We lived on a big hill that a lot of times the salt trucks had trouble getting up in the winter. And so on more than one occasion in the winter, we'd have a stranger sleeping on our couch. Times have changed. You don't see a lot of that anymore today. And that's because some of the wickedness of people have changed as well. But even the smaller things as far as people who need financial assistance, you know, 10 or 20 bucks, there's a lot of distrust associated with that. And again, that's because people have taken advantage. Does that mean that we just take benevolence and throw it out the window? No, I don't think it does. We just need to use good judgment in what we do. And actually, as we get into the idea of discussing ways that lead to poverty, we'll bring this subject up again. Yes, we can give people money. We can lend people money. We just need to be good judges of the character of the people that we're going to give money to. So we'll come up with that again. But we need to realize that the benevolence is commanded. It's commanded. You read the story of the Good Samaritan, and the question that was asked is what's your reading of the law? And the man answered to Jesus. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And then he goes on to tell the story. And Jesus said, which man was the neighbor? And the man answered, the one who did good. And what did Jesus say? He said, go and do likewise. It's a command. I mean, yes, when you read the law, and we're not under the law, but you read the law, it says, love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. But what does Jesus add at the end of that? He says, you go and do likewise. You act as that Samaritan. You be helpful to your fellow man. You provide for his needs when he's in need. We need to remember that. That's still something that we as Christians are responsible to do. Benevolence shows our faith. Like I said, the benefit is not just to the one that receives the good, but the one that is doing the good as well. It's a sign of his faith. In James chapter 2, James chapter 2 and verse 15, it says, if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to him, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you don't give them anything which is needed, what does it profit? Thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. So it's a physical manifestation of the faith that we have, that we're going to do those things that need to be done. If we see somebody in need and we don't do it, you know, even if we wish them well, but we're not willing to do anything about it, what good is that? In Matthew chapter 25, it actually begins earlier than verse 41. Verse 41 begins those on the left-hand side, where Jesus says, you know, those of you that I was in prison and you didn't visit me. I was sick. You didn't minister to me. I was naked. I was hungry. I was thirsty. And you didn't take care of me. I was a stranger. And he says specifically, I was a stranger and you didn't take me in. Somebody you didn't know. And they said, when did we do those things? And he said, as much as you did not do it to the least of these, you didn't do it to me. We need to remember when we're doing good for people, and even if it involves financial things like what we're talking about, that some of these perils of riches, who are we really doing it to? We're doing it to God, right? We're doing it to God. And when we refuse to do those things, just like that parable, like that proverb says there, he who has pity on the poor is lending to the Lord, and he, the Lord, will pay back what he has given. The Lord will pay back what we lend, and if we don't lend much, that's what the Lord's going to pay back to us. Same thing. Any comments or questions on this idea of benevolence or of the fact that it's commanded and we have a responsibility to do it? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So there's I think in this day and age, a good thing, and what I've seen, I think I've seen it here when people come by, and I've seen it in other places too, is the idea of holding that one that is in need, holding them to some degree of responsibility, you know, asking them a lot of questions, and a lot of time that enlightens. If they don't react well to those questions that are being asked to them, then a lot of times you get an idea of their character. And you can make a judgment based on that character. But yeah, we have the responsibility to be good stewards, and that's what we'll talk about on ways that lead to poverty, but be good stewards with that which we have to give to people, and make sure that those people that receive it are people that need it, and that aren't just scamming us. Brother Benningfield. Mm-hmm. That's a good. Yeah, we need to use discretion, and that's part of the judgments that we make in how we do it, because that reflects, again, that attitude that we talked about on Wednesday night, that attitude that we can have as somebody with material possessions, and sometimes we look down in a condescending fashion on those that do not. Or even if we don't, but we give that appearance, we still look down on others. So, yeah, that has something to do with it as well. We need to make sure that we're doing good and giving people financial means that need it for the right reasons. And that's because they need it. That's because it shows our faithfulness to God, and not because it makes us look good and makes somebody else look bad. That's a good point. Any other points about benevolence and the idea of how we are to do it or why we are to do it? Well, one more benefit of benevolence is that to the actual one, the one that's doing the giving, and there's three or four proverbs that talk about that. It says, "The merciful man does good for his own soul, but he who is cruel troubles his own flesh. He who has a generous eye will be blessed, for he gives his bread to the poor. It says, he who gives to the poor will not lack, but he who hides his eyes will have many curses. And this last one, whoever shuts his ears to the cry of the poor will also himself cry and not be heard." The idea that if you refuse to be generous with what you have, at some point that's going to come back on you. As the other one said, you know, the Lord is going to repay for how we lend. So kind of similar in that respect. There's a special responsibility of the rich, and we talked about this at the beginning of class. In 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 17, he says, those who are rich, you know, make sure you're not trusting in those riches. But instead, if you're still in James there, we're pretty close to Timothy. It's 1 Timothy chapter 6, the beginning of verse 17, which we've already read. He says, don't trust in those riches, but trust in God. But in verse 18, he says, let them do good, that they be rich in what? That they be rich in their financial gain still? No, that they be rich in good works. That they be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share. And the benefit to them, the rich people, storing up for themselves a good foundation for the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. So he says here, especially to the rich, you know, you have the ability, you have a special responsibility to make sure that you're using that wisely and you're being helpful to those that need that help, because you're storing up for yourself a good foundation. You're storing up for yourself rewards and eternal life by that. It proves our faithfulness. It gives credit to God. You think about when Paul was writing the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians, encouraging them in chapter 9, I believe it is. In chapter 9, beginning around verse 11, he's encouraging them to fulfill that pledge that they made, that they would send money. And he says, not just for my boasting, you know, so I won't have egg on my face. But he says, who's going to get benefit from that giving? Not just the people that receive it, but who? The Corinthians. Corinthians were going to receive benefit from that. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, beginning in verse 11, he says, while you are enriched in everything for all liberality, which causes thanksgiving through us to God, for the administration of this service not only supplies the needs of the saints, but also is abounding through many thanksgivings to God. Through this giving, thanksgiving is made to God. While through the proof of this ministry they glorify God, for what? For the obedience of your confession to the gospel of Christ. It shows what they were supposed to be doing, and for your liberal sharing with them and all men. And by their prayer for you, now they have people praying for them, who long for you because of the exceeding grace of God in you. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. So those receiving the money were not the only ones receiving the benefit. Those Corinthians would receive great spiritual benefit. God would be glorified, all because of what was being done. So there's definitely a benefit to giving, being the one who's giving. The story of the rich man and Lazarus, while not the main point, we know that the rich man and Lazarus was there. The rich man knew about Lazarus because Lazarus sat at his gate every day and begged for the crumbs. Lazarus was actively searching for help, and the rich man did nothing about it. And in verse 25 of Luke 16, Abraham says to him, you know, you remember in your life you had good things and Lazarus didn't have anything. And now he has good things and you are in torment and he is comforted. So that kind of rings true with that last one there. Whoever shuts his ears to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be heard. You think that's the case with the rich man in that story? I think so. You know, he had all that opportunity for however long it was to provide for Lazarus, to give him something, and he didn't. And then he was the one that was in torment, asking for what? Just water on the tip of a finger. And that cry went unheeded. Are there any thoughts on this idea of benevolence and giving, or any other comments, any other applications? Just made a couple. Brother Bowen?
Deals with church benevolence. A church assists the saints in another place. Obviously, the church cannot do that if individuals are not themselves benevolently minded.
That's right.
In regard to that responsibility of the church.
That's a good point and a good distinction. The church is built on the individuals, and if the individuals are not willing to be generous and benevolent with what they had, then that particular congregation is not going to have that attitude as a whole. That's true. Any other comments or questions on the idea of benevolence? Yes. That's a very good... What verse is that? Because I was looking for that one and didn't find it to add to there. So 4:16-17. Yes, very much so. The idea, again, is it's not for so much for the recipient. The recipient gets benefit from it, but the giver gets a great spiritual benefit from it. It shows their faith. It builds them up. They're doing the things that they're supposed to be doing. Good point. Any other comments or questions on this idea of benevolence or other applications? Very good point. Very good point. And I mean, because if you look in the very bigger picture of our salvation, all of those topics under the umbrella of our salvation, if God rendered to us what we deserved, we'd be in pretty bad shape. So we need to make sure that we're doing the best we can to treat people how we wish to be treated, because in many cases, specifically some of those that Rick mentioned, we will be treated just the same. Very much so. Good points. Any other points or comments, Trevor?
Just one additional verse that says the same thing in Acts 20:35, where Paul quotes from Jesus, it is more blessed to give than to receive.
That's a good point. Good verse to have and add in there as well. Any comments or applications that we missed just on this whole idea of some of the dangers that we have to watch out for if we're fortunate enough to have wealth? Or be blessed with financial things? Any other applications that we didn't make, or that you would like to make, or comments on some of the things that we said? Okay, I'll just give you a little preview of what we're going to talk about on Wednesday night, is the idea of ways that lead to poverty. And again, we have that handout that I've given out. There's a lot said on laziness. We could probably have a whole class on laziness, but we'll deal specifically with laziness first off the bat. With the idea of what, how that relates to leading to poverty. There's some other things said about laziness. We're going to look at the ones specifically that say, if you behave in this manner, a lazy manner, it will lead to poverty. We're going to look about borrowing and debt, and then just in general wickedness and foolishness and how those can lead to poverty. Any other comments or questions before we're just a couple minutes early, but that's all right because I have pickup duty for kids anyway today, so that'll work out well. If not, I thank you for all your attention and your comments. Really good comments again.